Those videos that I made during the pandemic when I was depressed, when I wasn't allowed to do what I wanted to do, but I said, I need to put out a video every single week. Those were the videos that got me attention from the TV network that then hired, well, that then gave me a TV show.
Welcome to episode 10. That's actually the 10th episode.
Wow. I started at 10. No balloons.
Yeah. I was expecting. So 10 weeks ago, I started a podcast, and this is my first time I have a guest on the show in person in Vancouver. So that's pretty exciting.
Live.
We made it work with the neon sign in the background. So I'm excited to introduce Michael.
Hello. Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Michael Downey, a YouTuber, also known as Downey Live on every single platform out there. And I go behind the scenes and take you on wild adventures all around the world.
Yeah, I actually, did I find the channel? You might have been on one of the meetups for SoCality or like Van City or something.
Yeah, Van
and
City.
Then you, I saw like somebody running around with a camera and doing like vlog stuff. I was like, who's that?
That's so interesting. So I don't know if you, Vancouver, so for me, YouTube, content creation, social media is a very lonely business where you come up with an idea, you go out and do it. You might do it with people occasionally, but then you go back and you edit all alone and you have to come up with your next idea and the business relies solely on you. And I wanted to meet other YouTubers in Vancouver. And so I went to this Van City meetup and everyone there were professional photographers and professional videographers. There were no other YouTuber like vloggers.
Yeah.
And I felt really embarrassed at that time because here I am running around filming myself while everyone else is taking it so professionally and seriously. And I told myself mentally, I'm like, I am a YouTuber. If I want to become successful in this, I have to get used to this.
Yeah.
And that was the first challenge. And I left going, I met some good people. I had a good time, but I was really embarrassed. I think I only had 2,000 subscribers at the time. So I was small. I had no credibility behind me. But now looking back,
it always helps if you have an audience behind it, you feel more confident when you do stuff. Because I feel like when you have like 200 followers and you're doing like these crazy stories, you feel like inside you feel like, oh, why am I doing this?
You feel almost fake. You're like, I'm not really that.
Yeah, true. But it's interesting that you say that because I think that was at Capilano.
Yeah.
Capilano Bridge. Yeah, there's all, like, I just went to one on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Meetup, and it's all these photographers. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's it's a good community to meet other people, but it's funny that you tell the story that, because I saw you running around, because it definitely caught attention to people.
Yeah, that's something I've had to get used to.
And you said at the time you had around 1,000, 2,000?
I think 2,000.
How long ago was this? Two years ago? 3 years ago?
Would have been three and a half, 4 years ago.
Maybe. And now you're at how many?
365,000 on YouTube and 200 and something thousand on TikTok. And
And you're saying you're doing going behind the scenes of everything, like traveling, so, or like, because it was hard. Like, I think I've watched almost everything, the single one of your videos, because when the pandemic started, I was like, because I wasn't back in Germany, so I kind of missed Canada, so I wanted to watch all the the videos, right?
About Vancouver.
Yeah. And then I went way back. You went, I think you did some videos in the Kootenays.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So I said, oh shit, like I want to go back. And
so part of my videos helped inspire you to come back to Canada.
Yeah. I
mean, in a little way.
Yeah. Yeah. But you made me miss even more. So maybe you made my time worse.
FOMO.
FOMO. So, did you ever know what you want to do? Because I think now you're focusing more on train stuff. That's a big part.
Yeah,
And then you also did like travel stuff, but then you also did like local Vancouver, like on the public transport. Like,
right.
Well, so, how was that process figuring it out?
Okay, great question. Basically, I had a marketing job and I worked in experiential marketing. I got to travel all the time. I was in charge of Western Canada and we were putting on festivals and I was meeting with people and going to all these events and I loved it. And then we lost our biggest client, which was the program I was working on. So I was laid off because my job no longer existed. And at that time I said, okay, I can either go and apply to any other agency and just continue doing this, or I can just take a step back. You know, I was getting severance. I had a couple of months of, you know, salary still coming in. So there were a couple of trips I wanted to do, and it was a good chance for me to stand back and go, what do I really want to do? Like, what really makes me happy? So I went on these trips, and I came back, and I had filmed all the trips, and I spent all of my free time editing them. And that's when I realized I really enjoy this, and I'm not so bad at it. There's got to be a way I can make some money at it. And I was watching more and more YouTube and less television, and one of the YouTubers I was watching described how he made money. And I have a business degree in marketing, and it just clicked. I was like, ah, that's how you make money, doing what I love. I want to do that. And I really, as long as I'm doing what I want to be doing, I'm happy. So at the beginning, when you have 800 subscribers, you're not going to get invited to the five-star resorts or the wilderness resorts or any of those incredible places because you have no subscribers to make it worthwhile. So that's when I started doing these behind the scenes videos where I would ride on a tugboat for a day or ride with the groomers up at Cypress Mountain or take you, the viewer, somewhere that you're not allowed to go because no one else on YouTube seemed to be doing that. And I did have a curiosity and an interest, and that could be my way to be discovered on YouTube when no one else is delivering that.
And when you did these behind the scenes episodes, did you reach out to the people?
Yeah.
You can't just like walk up there no. and like ask. So, do you reach out?
So the best example is that, let's take the tugboat company as an example. I emailed 7 tugboat companies. 2 of them didn't get back to me at all. 4 of them said no. And 1 of them said, sure. And there's no reason to. The tugboat company is not trying to sell you and I products.
Yeah.
They have their clients. Yeah. They don't need to do any marketing. Yeah. So really, me being on the boat, I'm a complete liability. Ooh. It really doesn't make sense why they would. But they said yes.
Yeah.
And so then once you go and do one, then you can take that video and show it to the next other company people. And say, hey, I did this on a tugboat. Will you let me ride with the snow groomers? Mm. It'd be something similar. Yeah. And they go, oh, okay.
So once you have one video you show, it's kind of the same when you do... like shooting videos, if you don't have something to show,
right,
companies won't hire you or like work with you because you don't have anything to show.
What's the saying? Show what you want to shoot?
Yeah.
That's it. And I would say on this note as well that reaching out to whoever you want to work with, in this case, when I wanted to do the snow groomers, obviously you want to work with Whistler, the biggest ski resort in the area, the biggest ski resort in North America by skiable land size. So I want to go there. And they go, sorry, we only work with influencers of 50,000 subscribers or more. Well, okay, you have 3 competitors locally right here, Cypress, Seymour, and Grouse. Reach out to them. 2 of them were offering me more and more. They're like, well, can we also take you here? Can we also show you this? So there's, you know.
Did you do, I haven't seen those videos.
Yeah.
Watch any single video, but I didn't see. I saw the one on Golden, like on Kicking Horse.
Yeah, Golden, Kicking Horse. I did, so that's Resorts of the Canadian Rockies. Yeah. Basically, I made one video with Fernie, and they said, we love that. Can you make more? Here, you could ride with our ski patrol team, our avalanche blasting team, you know, and they gave me a whole list. And I said, that'd be great. So I go and do that. And of course, they own other resorts, Kicking Horse being one of them. So once one resort sees it, they go, well, could you do that at our other resort? Mm. And so each time you go in and do something, gives you more and more opportunities. And I'll add, because I'm sure we'll get to the money question a little bit later on, but when I reached out to Fernie, when you have 2,000 subscribers at the time, you're not making very much money. So you, as a creator, need to do whatever you can to make money. And obviously, I have a skill in video creation, and I know they have a need for social media content. So I say, hey, while I'm going behind the scenes with your ski patrol team or your avalanche blasting team, I can make a video for you for Instagram or for Facebook, you know, and if we plan it beforehand, then you can get exactly what you're looking for. But I do charge for that. Mm. And they go, no, we're not interested, but go behind the scenes, do that, have fun.
Okay.
So I make those videos, put them out on YouTube, and they go, wow, we love those. Can you make us a 1-minute Instagram video for each of the 5 videos I had done? And I say, of course, but... like I said, I charge. And at that point, now that they've seen it proven, they go, no problem. And they bought 5 videos off of me.
Okay.
So that one trip to the ski resort not only gave me 5 videos, which was really good for my channel and grew a lot, but I earned, well, quite a bit of money off of it as well.
So when you shoot those videos, do you shoot with like that you have to create those social media videos on Instagram in the back of your head, you already think about that, or you just shoot for YouTube and then just see what you have?
So when they said no, I focus on myself. What's going to be best for YouTube in that case? But obviously they liked what they saw. Yeah,
so you can pull that, pull it out. That's so interesting. And how long did, so like you started, did the, that was like the first behind the scenes with the ski resorts?
Yeah, that was in the first kind of year of me starting them. Yeah.
And then that became kind of like a trend, because I think I saw one with the, was it a cherry, like the
cranberry harvest.
That got so many views.
Yeah. I think so many of us have these curiosities about things, and we know how a cranberry is grown. It's in a field, it's on a farm, and you get your cranberries. But you don't really know, and we're not interested enough to do our own research or go all the way out to a farm. But if I put out a 5-minute video, you go, I've always wondered. Mm. Sure, I'll take a look.
Yeah. So when you started that, so did you have like the motivation? Because actually, like how you told me is when you started, it kind of like went off just right from the start when you started your YouTube. Or was there a time where you didn't get any followers and then felt demotivated or something?
Yes. Yes. So after my first year, so I went in, I went all in.
After the job, you quit the job, you went all in.
Yeah. So I actually, when you start with zero subscribers, like I said, you make zero money.
Yeah.
So I had to have a job. And so I took a job that I would hate, a junk removal job, cleaning up people's garbage.
Okay.
And that way, if I had a job that I would hate, it would motivate me to make YouTube faster. And I'd be very motivated in the evenings to edit and weekends to film and get it done. But after a year of that, I only had 1,500 subscribers. I wasn't being successful. So I quit the job, took out a loan so I could continue to do it, but put more time into the YouTube.
How many videos at the beginning, how many videos did you put out? Like one
a week. One a week. Since the beginnings, one a week, every single week. I've missed a couple here and there. Mm. So I probably put out 50 a year
kind
of thing.
And then you put 50 videos out and you have like 1,000 subscribers.
Exactly.
That's the grind at the beginning.
That's it. And so you go, okay, something has to change. So I quit the job, took out a loan. We're going to do a second year more focused. But after the second year, I only had 5,000 subscribers. So it's growing faster, but not nearly enough.
That's like me. I have 2 years now and I have like, I think 8,000 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grinding. So you're on the same path.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So after 2 years, I kind of was sitting there going, maybe this isn't going to work. Mm. So I started when I was 29. So halfway through my first year, I turned 30. Mm-hmm. Everyone celebrates their 30th birthday. They're getting promotions. They're having kids. They're getting married. They're buying the house. And here I am at 30, taking out a loan to start a YouTube channel with zero subscribers. It's not an easy way to celebrate. I felt like I was almost a failure. And so when I'm after 2 years, only 5,000 subscribers, really reassessing. But in that time, I'm deciding, I look back and I go, I've ridden on tugboats. I've ridden, done all this stuff with ski resorts and all the things that I've done while my friends have been sitting in a cubicle. And I couldn't imagine not doing it. And it was at that moment, that month, I jumped from 5,000 subscribers to 10,000 subscribers in 1 month. And when that happens, obviously you have a lot more views.
And you get more motivated.
More motivation, and it brought in enough money to keep me going as well. And so you go, okay, we'll keep going.
Yeah. So was it one viral video kind of took off? And then you got 5,000 subscribers? That's interesting, like how that... you grind so hard and then you had one video, which...
And then it happened again the next year. Every December, it's almost doubled. So it went from 5 to 10. And then the next year, I had grown to 30,000 and it doubled to 65,000. And then grew again over the year to...
So next year, 700,000?
Well, I don't think it can keep doubling, but we'll get there.
When you had the initial jump... did you make, because you can make money from AdSense.
Yeah.
I feel like you can't get rich off of that unless you have like a lot of views, I guess.
Right.
So you said like you made money from that. So from 5 to 10,000, was it like partnerships or did you just have the AdSense?
AdSense views.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
So, I mean,
that's like with 10,000 and you make enough to,
it's pretty clear cut. AdSense, the number is a little bit different for each person, but mine is right about $10 per per 1,000 views.
Okay.
So if you think about 1,000,000 views is $10,000.
Yeah.
And so when I was at 70,000 subscribers, I knew that if I wanted to go on a trip, there was one specific trip I wanted to go to Europe, calculated flights, hotels, food, transportation, all that, was going to cost me $3,000. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, well, to get $3,000, I need X number of views. You only need 300,000 views. Okay, well, doing that with one video is maybe hard.
Yeah.
But six videos,
yeah,
it's either 50,000 a video or one of them takes off, yeah, and gets you 200,000.
And it's funny that, because on YouTube, other than other social media sites, the videos, they live longer. So they can push a video out that is already 2 years old.
I've had that.
And like all of a sudden it gets traction, right?
Yeah.
And when you post something on, I don't know, Instagram or
it's there for TikTok, 3 days, it's like, and it's gone.
2 or 3 days, and then just like,
yeah,
nobody watches it anymore. No. That's a good thing. That's also what I like about YouTube, because I had a video that I made that got a lot of views, and it was like sitting for like a couple of months, no views, and all of a sudden it just like took off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like the best. Like all of a sudden you're getting, oh, well, where did it come from? And it's just, yeah.
Those moments for me were always when I was doubting if this is working,
yeah,
and suddenly something would like take off,
yeah,
and you go, okay, we'll keep doing it.
That's cool.
And you led into, you know, I do a lot of train videos now.
Yeah.
So my content has kind of changed from,
yeah,
lifestyle vlogs around the city and my life to travel when I wanted to. It was always a good way, A, to write off travel,
yeah,
as a business expense, but B, to get to enjoy and do travel,
yeah,
more often. And the behind the scenes, like I said, was a way for me to grow. And I went to a wedding in California, in San Francisco. And instead of just flying back, I was like, what am I rushing to get home to? I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I just need to make interesting content. What's the most interesting way for me to get back from California? I'll take the train. It's 24 hours. I sat in coach class and I tried a new format of video where I used a lot more voiceover to keep the video faster paced. And that video hit 600,000 views really quickly.
Wow.
And I went, huh, I'm planning another trip. Instead of flying directly to that city, I'll fly another city and I'll take the train for 24 hours again. And I did the exact same format, the same thumbnail, everything.
I guess, interesting.
And it got 1,000,000 views in 3 weeks. And I
went,
okay, I'm onto it. And like I said,
I guess people like to watch train content.
Yeah, I guess they do. But like I said, when a million views is $10,000,
yeah,
you go, okay, let's do that again.
Yeah.
If that's going to pay my rent,
yeah,
and for me to get an editor, let's do that. And that's how I've transitioned more into the train content.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's interesting because I never thought, especially in Canada, that the trains are not really like a way to get around here. Because
no.
in Germany, where I'm from, that you can just take a train to any like city.
Right.
You know, like here, you can't really. I can't take the train to, I don't know, Kelowna, can I? No,
nope,
not really.
No, nope, can't take it to Kelowna, can't,
yeah,
take it to Calgary. Can't.
I can't go to Kamloops though, right? But
you
is it only the Rocky Mountain here or is it?
Via rail. Basically, there's one train a week that could get you to Kamloops.
One train a week, okay,
yeah.
No.
And you would arrive in Kamloops between midnight and 3 a.m.
Okay, no. So it's not like a way to get around here.
No.
Not really.
No.
It's more like for like an experience when you want to actually take a train to have the experience.
Exactly.
Not from go just go to A to B.
Exactly. But for someone like me who's not in a rush per se, when this is my job,
yeah,
I can showcase the experience and still get to where I want to go and then do what I want there.
Yeah.
And if the train aspect is going to get me a lot of views, well, then I'm happy.
Yeah.
I think a great example is I wanted to go to Churchill, Manitoba. When the pandemic hit, you know, international travel stopped. There's one small town, Churchill, Manitoba. It's the polar bear capital of the world. And it's full, it's only accessible by train or by plane. There's no highway or road in. So it's very difficult to bring in building supplies or anything like that. So it's a very small town with very few hotels, which means it's very expensive because international photographers want to come in and see the polar bears.
Yeah.
But when international travel stopped when the pandemic hit, that meant all of their accommodations and everything got canceled. And so they suddenly had a lot of availability last minute instead of having to book 2 years in advance. So I asked my dad, I said, do you want to go see the polar bears? This is our chance. And he said, yes. And we took the train there. So for my storytelling, the train video got 1.5 million views to get us to the polar bears. But the viewers, because they were brought on this video to see the polar bears, they watched episode two and they watched episode three of us there with the polar bears. There you go. So it's become my way to bring the viewer along to see what is worth seeing.
That's cool. And then I was going to ask you, because you mentioned COVID, when everything stopped and you couldn't go anywhere, did you stop making videos or you just...
No, I wanted to. It's tough, so...
Because you can't do any... I don't know how I was in Canada, because I was back in Germany back then.
Yeah.
You couldn't even, like, go, like, 20 miles from your house, so you just, like...
Right.
So, I don't know, Vancouver is maybe more interesting.
Yeah, we had to stay within our health region, so, again, I couldn't go to the next city over.
Can't go to Whistler or something?
But what was toughest for me was I felt I had all this momentum with my channel. I was growing faster than ever. I was really excited about all the potential. And of course you can't travel. And so I go, okay, I'll focus on the behind the scenes videos. But now they couldn't have any non-essential workers on site. So anyone I wanted to do any collaborations with, whether they were people or businesses, all of that had to stop. I couldn't travel. So you go, okay, how can I transition? Yeah. What can I do? And I honestly got depressed because I had been building this business of following my dream and now you can't. And so, your battery is low.
That's for the screen.
Oh, okay. we'll cut that part out. And so I couldn't do what I wanted to do. So I knew this is what I wanted to do and I loved it. And so I forced myself to make one video a week. And that was almost from a mental health perspective, to get myself out of the house at least once a week.
What did you do? What kind of videos?
So I made like hidden gems of Vancouver, things that I didn't know. I researched a lot of history of Vancouver. I was going through the City of Vancouver website for anything interesting about the city that people don't know about.
Was that when you did the pool video?
That was one of them.
That was really nice. Because I walked by that pool. It's like
we see it all the time.
It's like... in between two
buildings. The building looks like an H, and the part that crosses has a glass bottom pool that's 200 feet up.
Yeah.
And so I got to go swim in there.
Cool. That's cool.
But what I didn't realize was that all these Vancouverites, they're also all trapped in their houses, and they're watching more YouTube because of it. They discovered my channel because I'm showing them things around their city, and a lot of people came up to me in the city, and they were like, "We have kids and we didn't know what to do with them because everything was closed, but you showed us something every week that we could go and take them and go explore. We'd watch the video with you with the kids."
That's the best thing to hear, right?
And we go off and you're like, wow. I was doing it for my own mental health and not realizing I was helping others at the same time.
That's perfect. So fast forward to like last year or this year, you made a television show.
Yeah.
How did that come to? Because you wanted to do that trip across Canada, also on a train, right?
Yeah.
And first of all, you wanted to do it for your YouTube channel, obviously.
Right.
And then a television network approached you and you did a collaboration with them.
Yeah. So I took everything I've learned over the last 4 years and through the pandemic going, okay, train videos work well for me, but I enjoy getting to see what there is to do when you get there, not just sit on the train the whole time. And Canada, travel within Canada was opening up, so I wanted to take that opportunity to travel across Canada. I figured the best way is to go tip to tip by train. And I wanted to make a series, because a series is really good for building subscribers. Let's say you started watching, you'd never seen me before, but you come across video number 5 in my series of 10. Well, now you know, oh, he's doing this big trip. I missed episodes 1 through 4. I should go watch those. Yeah. And I should definitely subscribe because I want to see episodes 6 and 7. So that was a big strategy for me and a big lifelong goal to see all of Canada this way. So I planned this big trip, tip to tip, East Coast to West Coast by train. And all of a sudden, for the last year and a half, I'd been making only Vancouver videos. All of a sudden, I get a phone call from Czech TV, which is a local independent station on Vancouver Island. And they said, "Hey, we'd like you to come do those like local Vancouver videos you're doing. Do them over here in Victoria and on Vancouver Island." And I talked to them for a little bit and I said, I just don't have time. I'd really like to. And I really like your channel, but I have this big plan to go coast to coast by train across. And there was this pause at the other end of the phone. And then he said, well, that sounds pretty good. Could we put that on TV? And we end up hanging up. And Nicole, my partner, she's there. She goes, who is that? Because this call sort of came out of the blue. Yeah. And I looked at her. I said, I think I just pitched a series TV show. And they called me. And sure enough, they believed enough in me and showcasing Canada. And it was a good fit for both of us, for them to put it on TV, that I got to make what I wanted and do it exactly the way I wanted. The only restriction was it had to be 23 minutes to fit a 30-minute time slot for TV.
With commercials.
Yeah.
And like they said, you said they called you. Did you have any, like, your information? Are they out there? Like, do you know how they got your number or something?
I think they emailed me first.
Okay.
You know, they found my email through my YouTube channel. Or
you, like, is all the information on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, not my phone number. Don't go looking for it. But my email's on there. Yeah,
because it's important to work with, when you work with brands, they have to know where they reach you, right?
They have to be able to contact you.
I was going to ask you, so, like, what was your favorite province, like, when you go, like, if you can tell? I've actually watched every single one. Obviously, BC... Yeah. I mean, I'm biased, but of course. I actually like the very east. What was that?
The very first one, Newfoundland.
Yeah, I really liked that one.
Newfoundland was incredible. I really liked Quebec, and I also really liked Saskatchewan.
Yeah. Saskatchewan, okay.
It's so underrated. Really? It's flat, but it's beautiful. And we went up north to northern Saskatchewan to an indigenous hunting lodge, which is now being more converted into an eco-tourism lodge because people want to hunt less and less. But we were an hour and a half by boat up this river from the nearest small town. I mean, I asked him, I was like, how close are we to your nearest neighbor? He said, we're 60 kilometers away from my nearest neighbor. Jeez. And it was just dead silence. Mm-hmm. No traffic, no anything. It was amazing.
That's why, it's one of the reasons why I came to Canada is, In Germany and Europe in general, there's so many people. Like in Germany, there's 80 million or more than 80 million people living. And in Canada, there's like 30 million or like 33 or something. Yeah. And then it's like the second biggest country. You can't really experience wilderness in Germany because even when you go to the mountains, there's a hut somewhere or there's like tourists somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like a remote area, but there's like restaurants and stuff like that. In Canada, there's no huts. You want to go to whatever, like Panorama Ridge, like do the hike. There's no huts there.
You could be walking for hours or days and not see anyone.
And then, my parents came to visit a couple years ago. And then we went to like Vancouver Island, like up the thing with the boat. And then it's like, nobody lives there. That's so weird.
Right.
In Europe, we don't really have that nobody lives there, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I came here. Because, I mean, Vancouver doesn't feel like a big city to me, especially in this area.
No, it doesn't feel like a big city.
And you're so close to nature, which is
which
is great. But Saskatchewan, I never thought. Like, I mean, I like mountains a lot.
Yeah.
There's no mountains probably there.
No, they have a ski resort, but you drive along this flat road, and you're like, where's the ski resort? It says it's 2 minutes up the road, and it's a valley. So you park at the top of the ski resort, and you ski down, and the chairlift brings you back up to the parking lot. Okay. It was so backwards to me when you park at the bottom of the mountain here and take the chairlift to the top.
That's crazy. I'm a skier, so maybe that would be a good experience to do.
Yeah, good reason to go visit. Yeah. There you go.
So what's next for your channel? I saw some stuff on your your Instagram.
So
you went to the States already?
I've been to the States. I've been filming Travels by Train season 2.
Season 2.
A little inside scoop. No one knows the path yet, so I'll
you were all over the place. I saw on Instagram. Like you just...
I was all over the place. This is the storyline. First time I'm telling it to anyone is right here.
Wow.
So, Seb, I'll be traveling from the most southern train station in America to the most northern train station. So from Miami, Florida to Alaska by train. And along the way, getting out, seeing 10 of the most iconic and interesting and historic trains, whether it's the most luxurious train or the highest altitude train. But the whole purpose is each episode will be focused on a train, but really it's about what else is there. I mean, I'm riding on an Amish farm in their Amish buggy and doing all sorts of stuff that's all over the United States that you wouldn't get to go see unless the train was the reason that you went there for. And I can already tell you it's been Such a wild and unexpected trip.
Did you finish it already? No, right?
I haven't finished it yet.
Because
I had to come back.
South?
From Miami.
So you have to go through Canada though, right?
No. This is a very interesting part. So there's a ferry that goes from Bellingham, Washington to Alaska and without then stopping in Canada. So you don't need a passport.
Okay. Okay.
It's a 5-day long ferry.
Wow. You better get like a good cabin to sleep.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's been filmed. Like when, you know, when it comes out?
I think we'll start airing it in August.
Okay. And are you working again with the TV channel again? Or?
We haven't signed any agreement yet, so it's nothing official, but the discussion was probably.
But you're doing mainly for like a YouTube channel.
So the last series was mostly focused for TV, and it didn't actually perform as well on YouTube as I would have liked.
Yeah.
And I know why. And so that's why season two is a little bit more focused on a specific thing, a specific train. It's more driven. Each episode is driven by the YouTube title and thumbnail. And the story fits in around it. Whereas last time it was like about a whole province and just generally traveling by train. It was too broad to be clicked.
You never know though. Like they lived there for a long time, so maybe it pops.
That's true. I still think it was a great series.
Yeah. You mentioned the thumbnails. How important is the thumbnails in your videos? Because I've seen some really good ones. The one with the pool was really stuck out. And then the one with the cranberries where you kind of standing
waist deep
in cranberries. How much time do you spend on creating those, or are you just taking screen grabs from the videos? Are you thinking about the thumbnail already?
Both of those were about the thumbnail first. And once I had the thumbnail in mind, then I knew it was a good idea to go film it. But when I go there, I want to take that picture, get it right. You take so many different pictures, but I know exactly what's going to work. So I mean, in that pool one, for example, I needed my eyes open underwater with the traffic below me. So you could see I'm on a glass pool with road below me.
Did you take the picture yourself?
I took that picture myself over and over again. My eyes were burning for the next 2 days from all the chlorine. But it's so important. Otherwise, people don't click. And those two videos you talk about are two of my biggest YouTube videos. They each have over 2 million views.
Yeah.
And the cranberry one has 3 million on TikTok as well. And the other thing I like to do is I want to set up the thumbnail and then film my intro right there, right after I take that picture. So when you click it, you go, this is what I'm hoping to see is Michael in a field
like a
of cranberries.
In the beginning.
And I click it and I'm right there, just as you saw the camera in the same position going, I'm going to show you how this is all done. And now the viewer is going, he's given me exactly what I came here for.
Yeah.
And now they trust you and they're going to watch the video.
And then you always are in your thumbnails.
At the beginning, I wasn't as much, but now it's become, I'm so much the brand.
Yeah.
When you see my face, you go, oh, we like Downey Live. Let's watch his video.
That's so interesting that you say that, because I recently watched a YouTube video showing off that there's two different kinds of YouTube creators. One, like, you know, Casey Neistat, you would watch Casey Neistat do anything, even if it's the most boring thing. Have you watched that video?
I'm not sure exactly, but Casey, it was just his face. It didn't matter what the background was.
Or he could do just like eat pizza the whole video and just talk about some stuff.
But you saw his face. You clicked that thumbnail no matter what.
Yeah. And then there's like more like people that do more experience stuff, you know, like.
Right.
Anybody could do that,
right.
You know, and you would watch that for the experience.
Because
the
experience is so interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just an interesting concept. I saw somebody be discussing that, because I would even like Casey Neistat, I would, if you invested in the person, you would watch them do anything, right?
Right.
So even if it's not that interesting, but you want to see what they're doing, right?
And so I try to combine those two theories.
Right,
so I'm on one side of the thumbnail and whatever is interesting is on the other side.
Yeah. It's funny with you, because I think you are more of the leaning towards the Casey Neistat thing, because once you're like invested in your videos, even if I'm not super interested in like the subject,
the topic,
I will still watch it, right?
It's working.
There we go. So I have some questions that I wrote down.
Yeah,
actually.
Let's make sure you get them all.
Yeah. So when you're like filming all this stuff, you go by the concept, what are you filming on? Like, do you bring a lot of gear with you, or
as little as possible?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So I do have my big camera, Sony A7C with the Rode mic on top. But honestly, the iPhone 13 Pro that I have these days, the camera is so good with the HDR that in certain situations with hard lighting that's contrasted with, you know, really dark spots and light spots, my camera doesn't pick it up as well as the iPhone. True. The only benefit of my big camera is the microphone, and yeah, audio is such an important part. People will deal with a shaky camera as long as the audio is good. But if there's loud traffic noise, your iPhone's going to pick up all of it. So
yeah, I have a thing for you. There's like a microphone you can have, you know, these microphones you can just,
oh, you just put it
here and it just like sticks out here
and you just hold your
and you just film.
Oh, great.
And then it's just really good. It's like $200-$300.
Wow,
it's okay. A really good one. I record a podcast with that. It's
oh man, the best. Now my whole equipment bag is useless. Yeah, with just the phone.
I used to bring my camera when I go hiking and like film all my stuff on the camera, because especially when you go hiking, you go up the mountain and bring all the gear.
Yeah,
it's it's so exhausting. Now I only bring this, which is so good. The video is quality is amazing, and especially when you put it out on social media. I mean, maybe YouTube is a little different, because I watch it usually on the big TV.
Oh, you watch on the TV?
Yeah. That's another question. Like, do you have insights where people watch the YouTube stuff?
Yeah.
Is it mostly on mobile now, or is it?
That's really interesting. I haven't looked into where, like, how people watch, whether it's mobile, computer, or tele or TV.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in where they're dropping off. It's all about the story.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting question I haven't considered.
Yeah, because I think YouTube is one of the only platforms I like to watch on a bigger screen, because usually it's more...
It's longer.
Yeah, it's longer. And short form content, like on the phone, you just consume when you have a minute.
Yeah.
And then when you want to watch something, I also like... People watch Netflix on their phones. I don't really get that either.
Yeah.
So I like to watch YouTube on a big screen, so that maybe... The phone quality on the big screen, you can see the difference to a camera for sure.
Definitely, definitely. But it's changing, and people will put up with that if the story is good enough.
Yeah. If the story is good, the quality really doesn't matter.
Right.
Then I wanted to ask you, because I also film like sometimes in public, and I got so embarrassed, like when people watch me. How long did it take for you to get used to filming in public? Like, I feel like it comes over really natural when you do that. Also, I learned that by doing it more often, if I record a story or something too often, it doesn't come out natural. Do you do like a lot of retakes?
Do I repeat stuff? I do. So, okay, to answer the first part of that question, how long did it take me to get used to it? When I started being a YouTuber, I actually was also starting to date my partner and was meeting her friends for the first time. And like I said, I was working at a junk removal company, and I was, you know, introducing myself, and they're like, what do you do?
Yeah.
And I would say, oh, I work at a junk removal company, but I'm trying to start a YouTube channel. And it came to a point where I had to decide. I go, do I really want to become a YouTuber? Do I want to be a YouTuber? And mentally I had to make the decision, say, okay, I have 600 subscribers, but I am a YouTuber first, and I have this job that's helping me get there. And so I was now introducing myself as, hi, I'm Michael, I'm a YouTuber, and I'm currently working at this junk removal company. Of course, they would go and check my channel, and I'd have 600 subscribers. But mentally, I needed to do that to tell myself, this is what I do. And that helped me get over filming in public a little bit, because this is my job.
Yeah.
The best part I like is when, let's say you're at a ski resort and you're skiing and you're in line at the bottom of the chairlift, and I'm talking to the camera, and you know, look over and some lady kind of scoffs. She's like, you're filming yourself while skiing? And I laugh, because I laugh back, not actually to her, but in my head I laugh back, because it's a Tuesday and I'm getting paid to ski right now, yeah. where you've taken vacation time and you're paying to be here. In fact, maybe the mountain is even paying me to be here. So who's really laughing? Yeah. So there's a little bit of mental twisting of the tables there to make it happen. But I will say, when I'm out in public, I film as quickly as possible, and I find those corners where I can get a good angle of what's in the background, but without disturbing anyone. If I can do it under the radar, then that's even better. And on top of that, if you're with friends, it's a lot easier to interact back and forth. When you're alone, it's still hard. It's still hard.
I see that. I always go like a little bit further away from other people and then film there. I wouldn't do it in like a crowd. The airport is kind of like tricky.
It's really tough.
And then I feel like also when you do that at the airport, you kind of don't sound natural.
Yeah.
At least I am, because you always thinking, is somebody watching? And like you're not like speaking like naturally, because you always feel weird.
So I always have my story planned out very, very clearly. And I know exactly what shots I need. And so I can film it really quickly and say my point. I don't just vlog where I'm talking all the time. And part of that is because I know what I need to film. Mm. The other part is because I don't like just filming in public. So how can I be the best, most efficient at that?
Yeah. And when you go to all these places and experiences, that's something I struggled with. When I go to like a nice place and, you know, you go on the train rides, do you actually get to enjoy
That's a great train question. Ride? Yeah.
Or actually, because when I go somewhere, I used to be way worse at that. I went to a nice spot, you know, sunset goes down. I went somewhere with my brother and he was set at the fire because he's not into anything film related. He just like sits there, enjoys it.
And you're running around? I was
like running around with the camera and stuff like that. And I was like, what the hell are you doing, man?
Yeah, yeah. So I get that question a lot. And one of the big moments for me when I realized this is, I took my dad ATVing, but we got gifted free ATVing with this company because of who I was and what I do. And it was great. So my dad gets to go, but I need to hop off the ATV to film. I need to vlog. I need to put the drone up in the air. So I'd ask him to go ride and I'd have the drone follow him. After our free 45-minute ATV experience, I got to ride for about 8 minutes of it. And I was filming the rest of the time. So I really missed out. But I compare that to me sitting in a cubicle as a regular job, and instead I got to take my dad on this great adventure. So that's the benefit. The other side is I really love the process of being a YouTuber and a creator and telling this story. And it's not only in the moment where, yeah, it's fun, I get to be ATVing, but it's afterwards when you're editing it and you get to tell the story in a new way or show the highlights of the experience. So yes, you give up a little bit of that experience to have more opportunities and have a bigger, better.
I guess it's more also when you be a YouTuber, usually telling more stories for compared to me, like I'm just at a nice spot and just take photos of the same spot. Right. You know, there's no story to tell really. Right. Like I took so many photos. I can't remember one specific place really.
Gotcha.
And then I was just like, then I looked at my phone or my camera and have 200 photos of the same spot and I only post one.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's a little different than what you have. And also, I mean, when you're on a train ride.
But is that not easier for you where you go, okay, I need one epic shot and you could take it and then go, great, I can enjoy the rest of the time. Whereas I have to continue telling a whole story in a 20-minute video.
Yeah, because when it's sunset, I always think, oh, now the light is a little better. I have to take another one.
Right.
But as I'm said, now I'm way better at that because I just know that I just post one video or photo.
Yeah.
And then I just need one and then that's it. Because I kind of get to enjoy the places more. I mean, when you're on a train, you can also probably have some time to relax because if you do a 10-hour train ride, there must be some time to enjoy it, right?
Yeah, I will say my next big train video that's coming out is 45 minutes long.
Okay.
It'll be my longest video ever, but you want to capture every moment of the adventure, and so much can happen when you're meeting people and, you know, delays are happening and meals. So it all depends on how you tell the story. And I will add that going on vacation, particularly with my partner, Nicole, she's taking actual vacation time from her job that she wants to enjoy it. And when we used to go on vacation, that for me was, you know, my travel experience. And I would try to film everything and in editing, put the story together. Now I go with a really clear vision. And so I can film that. And if it's not part of the story, I can sit back and relax. So I've learned to figure out the plan beforehand and enjoy as much as I can.
Is that, because I always thought about that, because when you, because you are traveling a lot, right? And then you have a partner that has a fixed job. Is this, you think it's gonna, is this a, is it easy to do that? Or is it, because I always feel like if you have a partner that also does the same thing and you can like go together and do the same thing, it's, it might be easier.
Of course.
Because you probably gone a lot, like you travel a lot, right? Yeah. And I always think like long distance relationships are kind of like hard.
Yeah.
I struggled with that in the past. So yeah, it's, is it, you think that is,
it has its benefits and its drawbacks. Yeah. On the one hand, I can do whatever I want in, this is my business. It's not a business of us together that we need to agree on everything all the time. Now, of course, she doesn't want to be the stay-at-home wife while I'm traveling all over the world.
Yeah.
And I also miss her when I'm away and I don't want to be away for as long. So it really has me focused. What's the video? What's it about? I go, I do it, I come home.
Yeah.
So there's a really clear separation of this is work and this is home.
That's, and she was in a few videos of you, I think.
She gets, she'll be in the next series, which is this Travels by Boat series in the UK, where we'll be riding on the canals.
So she comes with you? Or?
She's coming with me on that one. So I'm really looking forward to that. I obviously enjoy traveling with her, and those were kind of why we connected so well at the beginning. But I've also heard that influencers, if they have separate businesses and try to travel together,
can also be difficult.
It can also be really difficult because you have different visions of what you want, who takes priority.
You can go to the same spot and then both post the same thing, like, you know, like I can see like some,
so it can be good and bad.
I know I actually would say like I prefer if like the person I'm traveling with is not like super into it, because then I can just use everything that I have for myself, right?
So, I mean, that's actually really interesting, is when I travel with friends, I'm lucky I have a couple of friends that don't have 9-to-5 jobs and they can be a little bit flexible.
Yeah.
They're the best to bring along because they're like, yeah, I don't mind being on camera. Go ahead. We'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I can film them and I can ask them to help or stand over there and they're happy to go along with it because they're getting a free trip, basically, if I'm paying for everything. Whereas if you go with another influencer, even a friend, I've done this a couple of times where we're both YouTubers. The problem is we're both filming at the same time and we're kind of ruining the other shot. It'd be like if we were both recording podcasts at the same time talking at, you know, I'm trying to tell my story while you're there telling yours.
Especially with another YouTuber, because he also has to record a lot of video.
Exactly.
Would it do like Instagram or something? It would be a little different.
A little different. Yeah. Yeah.
But you weren't, you like on the 2 months or how long was the trip with another YouTuber?
Yeah. So on this 10-week trip across Canada, that's what would happen. We'd get out of the rental car at the location that we're there to film at. We both had agreed on the plan and we were going to the same places and it was really helpful, but you'd get out of the car and we'd walk in different directions so we could vlog and tell our stories apart. And we didn't really interact too much on camera. It was little bits here and there. And so it was times where it was tough and it was times where it's helpful where I go, can you hold the camera while I record my intro? Or, you know, we were able to support each other. I could drive while he flew the drone, things like that, that you couldn't do alone.
That's the good thing. Like when you have someone with you that can actually film you, you don't have to like set up the shot by yourself.
Yeah.
Which I sometimes struggle with, because when I go hiking by myself, like it would be good to have somebody like filming me walking through like a nice landscape or something.
Yeah.
So it would be good. The other thing I want to ask you, where's the best bathroom on a train?
That's a great question.
Because you always do the bathroom tours.
I love the bath. So I actually was written up in 2 newspapers in Scotland for my bathroom tours on trains that I was doing. Because someone came across my train Scotland video and saw that I did a bathroom tour. And put it in the newspaper because they thought it was so funny that this Canadian guy was raiding their bathrooms that they think were quite ordinary. But I would say the Rocky Mountaineer has the nicest bathroom. Okay. Here it goes from Vancouver to the Rocky Mountains to Banff National Park. Stunning, huge, spacious, clean. But maybe the most unique are in some of these like really vintage historic trains that have kept their original bathroom. Yeah. It doesn't have the amenities you'd want, doesn't have hand dryers and things, but the like taps are the original vintage, and it's just cool. It's just special.
Yeah, that's I watched the train episodes, and you always do the bathroom.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
It's embarrassing when I do that on a full train of people, and I always yell, "It's time for a bathroom tour!" And everyone just looks back as I'm going into the bathroom with a camera, and they're like, "Who is this guy?"
So what was the, on all your like video shooting, what was the favorite video, or like what is the favorite experience you ever, if you can name?
The most incredible for me in terms of impact on myself and realizing the impact I'm having on the world and the impact that us as creators and YouTubers can have is partnering with the Canadian Coast Guard and getting to see what they do. But the biggest one was when I showed up to film their hovercraft. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible, huge machine. And when I'm doing these behind the scenes, whether it's a tugboat or, you know, snow groomer or whatever it is, I don't want to get in the way. I don't want to make this guy work twice and have to do things over. So I keep my equipment really small and run and gun, and I'm just going to capture the moment. So I show up for this hovercraft, and I say, "Great, you know, what's the plan today? What can you show me?" And he looks at me, the captain looks at me, goes, "It's whatever you want. We've been designated to do whatever you want today." A crew of seven and a whole hovercraft basically did whatever I wanted for 6 hours. Okay. So I had brought 2 FPV drone pilots because I wanted to make sure I captured this. We're out in the Salish Sea doing donuts in a government hovercraft because I told them to, so we could get better drone pilot shots. That was the moment where I'm sitting back going, why am I allowed to do this?
Yeah.
I'm just a YouTuber who makes videos like on my phone. It's wild.
It's crazy.
But they see the power in the messaging that I drive, I suppose, to an audience. And they are a government agency. They need to show the public what they're doing with the money and stuff. Yeah. So there's a, and that I think is part of my marketing and business background is knowing what the brand wants. Mm. And that makes it easier for me to pitch to them. But that was a moment where I was really like, I don't know why I'm allowed to do this.
Okay. Now we come to the worst experience. Was there anything, something went wrong, or did you lose your luggage, or or do you miss it? Oh, you miss a train or something, or the trains got canceled.
I'm in a very fortunate situation that this is my job.
Yeah.
If a train recently, I was on an Amtrak. This is the video that's coming out that's 45 minutes long. The train was delayed by 12 hours. That to some people means they'll miss their flight. They'll miss something else. We were supposed to arrive at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. It was now going to be arriving at 4 a.m. in the morning. So people are missing their hotel check-ins, and it can ruin the rest of your trip potentially. For me, this just added more excitement to the story.
Yeah.
You know, for I'm in a lucky position that I'm able to turn any negative into a positive. Yeah. And it's
people want to see the struggling also, right?
Exactly.
It's interesting for people.
And that's why it's such a long video, but we got to spend 3 hours in this small town in Colorado because we were stuck behind a freight train and so much happened, and I see it all as a positive.
Yeah. All right. I think now I want to talk a little bit business stuff.
Yeah.
Because now you have the ad revenue obviously coming in from your views.
Yeah.
But you probably also have like brand partnerships now because you have like a bigger channel.
Yeah.
Do these brands usually reach out to you, or do you reach out to them and pitch them?
A lot more reach out to me.
They reach out to you?
Very rarely do I reach out to them unless it's something specific that I want or need and want to.
And you also, because do you look that it's like fitting your content a lot, or do you just take anything? I'll tell you.
I mean, you depends.
Have to make money.
Of course. Right? So I should say that I do have a manager now, and they manage these brand deals. They also manage the licensing deals with television or other companies that want to license my footage off of me. It just takes all of this negotiation and back and forth off my plate. Let me focus on creating And obviously the manager has my best interest in play as well. And they know the market better than
I do. Did they reach out to you, the manager, or?
I reached out to him. I had another YouTuber friend who was working with him and seemed quite happy. So we met for lunch and kind of liked, we
and got along. And they take like a cut then, or?
They take a percentage of whatever they bring in. So not my YouTube revenue, which is just based off views, but they take off the brand deals that they negotiate.
Interesting.
And so all the brand deals basically go straight to them and they'll bring them to me. They'll be like, we think this is a good fit. Mm-hmm. You know, this one, maybe not a good fit. What do you think? And I'll go, yeah, let's pass on that. But some of them, you know, money talks at times. I have two full-time editors now. So
that's what I also wanted to ask you. Yeah.
I've brought on more expenses. You know, my monthly expenses are quite high now when I have to pay two full-time salaries.
Yeah.
And then myself, and then my travel expenses. Yeah. So if a company comes forward and they're not a perfect fit, but they are coming with a big budget, you go, okay, this will pay for my editors to continue working for the next 3 months. Yeah, let's do that. So there are those.
And you, because now you only focus on shooting and you don't edit anymore, or?
I don't edit anymore.
That's the dream. I hate editing.
Yeah. Yeah, but what's happened is I put a lot more time into my planning and a lot more time, well, into travel and long travel. So I'm still only able to put out one video a week. It doesn't, it hasn't sped up anything really.
Did you find it hard? Because that's the most I struggle with when you edited all the stuff yourself.
Yeah.
And then you hire an editor.
Yeah.
Were you at the beginning worried that it's completely changing your videos, or?
Right. So I was very proud of my editing style and thought I was a very good editor.
Yeah.
And compared to other vloggers that were very basic in editing, you know, this, I had created my style, and anyone that had subscribed to Downey Live at this point liked my storytelling and my editing. And now I have to hand that off to someone else to hopefully do it similarly.
Yeah.
But I understood that what's most important is the storytelling and continuing to drive more stories and more videos. And people will watch a different editor. That's okay. And I wasn't hiding it. I introduced my editors in my videos. I want them to be they're a part of the company, a part of the brand, and a part of the stories of us growing.
Yeah.
And my success is their success. But also, when you bring in a new editor, not only do they give you a lot more time to focus on other areas of the business, but he's better than me. He came with a lot more skills. I mean, I had to train him a little bit on how I do things, but I also gave him a lot of creative freedom where he would show it to me and I go, well, that's not how I would have done it, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's just done differently, and that's okay.
How did you find him?
Through a mutual friend. And
I think I saw what's his name?
Matt Mort was working for Discover Connection. Yeah.
I met up with Brad.
Brad, yeah.
Once, like 3 years ago, we went for a coffee, and he pitched me his ideas.
Right.
And now he that channel also took off a lot.
He did, yeah. He did really well. But you're right. So Matt, my editor, was working with him, but wasn't getting enough full-time work. And so once I was starting to work with brands, one particular brand said, we want to give me a 6-month deal.
Yeah.
Where I talk, you know, give them a 1-minute integration in a video once a month for 6 months. But what it did is it gave me enough money to pay Matt to edit for me. And so once I could do that, I could give him full-time work, and he's been with me ever since.
And then you feel like this has kind of helped you focus more on like the planning and stuff. And
And I understand when I bring on an editor, you give up revenue. That means I'm not earning that. That's going to him instead. Yeah. But the potential for him to help me grow the business even more is there. And we see that when TV shows are coming to me because they love the work that we're doing. And that's only possible because I have the help of Matt. And, you know, now Warwick, who's my new editor, is on board to help.
Two editors.
Well, I used to make videos that were 5 minutes long, and now they're 45 minutes long, and TikToks and Reels and everything else that's going into it. There's just no way I can have the time to do that myself.
Yeah. So what's next? What's the goal for the channel? Do you want to get to a, is it like subscriber based, or is it like, 'cause Yeah, you have a goal of hitting 1 million at one point?
Of course. Yeah. So I want to hit 1 million subscribers before the end of the year. So
this year?
This year. So it's ambitious.
300 now?
I'm at 360 some odd thousand. So we have a long way to go.
Just have to do a collab with Peter McKinnon or something.
Collab can help. But I think I have a really clear vision for what the channel is, what I've seen be the most successful. And here's the truth. Making a video that gets you 100,000 views or a video that gets you 1 million or 10 million views is not that different. It's just the idea and a little bit of storytelling. It's not significantly more work. So if you have the right ideas, and I'm hoping I do, and I've built it out into a series that's 10 episodes of back-to-back the same type of content that someone got in episode 3, they'll get in episode 4 and 5. And so if they like one of them, they're going to like all of them, and it'll be able to encourage subscribers. I hope it will work, but we'll see. But of course, the business isn't driven by subscribers.
Yeah,
it's I'm 35 years old. This is a career choice. I'm not chasing viral videos anymore. I want to do what I love. Mm-hmm. And as long as the business keeps allowing me to do it and is paying for things, then I'm happy.
Amazing experiences, right? Like I think I saw the video where you see it in Stanley Park in the house there. Like no normal person could have done that, right?
No.
Like it's good.
This line of work has allowed me the most incredible opportunities. Yeah. And if I can keep doing that, I'm happy.
Do you have any tips for people getting started with YouTube? Or
yes.
Do you think it's still like a good thing to, because now a lot of people are on YouTube. You think it's still possible to like?
Absolutely. It's probably easier now than ever. It's more common for people to understand that they can follow YouTubers and subscribe. And so that process is easier. I think there's a lot more resources out there for you to learn from, tutorials and stuff and teaching you how to grow. That makes it easier than ever. And that businesses are looking for people to work with. So even if you have a smaller following, the opportunity for brand deals is there. Or if you have a great idea to do something with them, it is easier. I think it's great. I think go for it.
Do you have any tips for people starting out?
Yeah, I think you have to start.
Yeah.
You have to try a whole bunch of videos. And when one takes off, you need to look at it and go, why did that work? What was it about that? You know, in my case, it was my train video. Mm. Okay, let's do that again. And by following a path that works, but you know, that wasn't your primary objective. My primary objective wasn't to make train videos. But if that's going to allow me to get to do what I want to do in life, then I'm happy to go do it. I have nothing against trains. They're great. They're a fun way to travel. So if I just have to take a train to get to where I want to go, but that means I can continue doing this, I'm happy with that.
So do you really dive into the analytics, like what works and what not, and like where people like?
Yeah, the biggest, off? Here's the one biggest driver for me that I've noticed in the analytics. Every big viral video I've had that's over 1 million views, they have been the biggest driver of subscribers to my channel. That means from my monthly views that month, the percentage of subscribers driven to my channel is twice to three times higher than the percentage of views that video got.
Oh, wow.
So the better you are at convincing someone to subscribe on your channel, the more likely that video is to go viral. That's as simple as I can put
it. That's crazy. Good insights. To wrap this up, I have one or two more questions.
Yeah.
Do you think that you ever want to stop with making YouTube channel, or do you do it until you're 90 years old?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people are like, oh, are you going to do this after you're 50, right until you're 90? What's the big play here? Is it to get something
YouTube
bigger?
Is YouTube even around then?
We don't know. Yeah. So I started this 5.5 years ago, and 6 years ago, I didn't know this was a possible job. Yeah. So it's hard for me to say 6 years down the line this, but I'm not in it to be a big YouTuber. I'm in this to do what I want and earn a living from it. And if it moves to TikTok, if it moves to television, if it moves to a new platform that's not out yet, as long as I can continue telling stories and doing what I want, I'm happy. If it means I have to have the camera in my hand filming everything myself, or I get a crew, you know, Netflix pitches me something and they're like, we'll give you a whole crew. As long as I get to do what I want, I'm happy.
Yeah, I think it's important to, like, even if YouTube is around, you can like just switch to other platforms, right? Yeah. If you enjoy what you're doing, and that's, I think that's the most important thing, that you enjoy it, and it really shows in the video. If you really put passion into it,
yeah,
I think it really shows in the videos, and that's, I think, the most important thing. Yeah, I think what, like, one more thing about the business thing, because a lot of people, or a lot of companies, they offered me, did you do that in the beginning? Like, they offered me free products in exchange, yeah, to promote it. I did you ever do that? Because I never say yes.
No, only when it really would suit me. For example, if I pitched them, I'd like a free stay at your hotel,
yeah,
because I'm traveling there anyways. If that benefited me, then I'm willing to do it. But never, I never wanted to take time out of my day, away from the focus of my channel, to suddenly focus on your company that I'm not getting paid for.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense unless I needed that product. You know, yeah, if I needed a new camera and a camera company pitched it, sure.
Yeah.
But if not.
Yeah, especially because my set of videos is a lot of like product based, you know, like camera stuff, right?
Right, right.
So a lot of companies reach out, can you review this? Can you review this? And it's like, no, I don't need another light. Or I don't need another like monitor or something.
And no offense, the audience doesn't really care about it either. They're there watching you for your photo tips, yeah, and your storytelling, yeah, out in the woods. It just takes you away from doing that, yeah, to focus on them, especially if it's free. If they're going to pay you, that's different.
Yeah, true.
Because you need to buy groceries.
I do.
Can't buy with a new light.
I do.
You can't go into the grocery store with this new free light you got to pay for groceries.
Maybe I get my first sponsor this year because I have to push hard. I always feel like, because I'm shooting in this room, right?
Yeah.
I feel like hard sometimes to motivate myself to, yeah, do YouTube videos, but I think it's good, same as you, that you have to stay consistent, and putting out one video a week is really helping you.
Yeah.
I'm doing that for Instagram. I'm doing one video every day for like, because it's easier to do, right?
Absolutely. Those videos that I made during the pandemic, when I was depressed, when I wasn't allowed to do what I wanted to do, but I said, I need to put out a video every single week. Those were the videos that got me attention from the TV network that then gave me a TV show.
You never know what comes out of it.
No, wild. Yeah. I'm the most depressed I've ever been, unhappy in my career, but pushed myself to make them. Yeah. And now I've had the biggest opportunity of my life that led to my most happiness.
Okay, last question before we wrap this up.
Can I say one more thing about your kind of question about brands and business before we get it? The other thing I've learned in the last, is it still recording?
I'm just checking it.
There's a light at the top.
This light is on, it's good.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. The other thing that I've learned in the last year and try to do as much as possible is do the work once, but monetize it as many times as you can. So you put in the effort into hosting me here, reaching out to me, sending me the email, planning your questions, recording this now, editing afterwards. You're doing a bunch of work. Why put it out onto only one platform when you can put it out onto all of them, your long form, your TikTok, your Instagram reels? Why not put a sponsor in the podcast, hopefully, and then maybe you're able to put it on television later or license something we say out to someone else. As many times as you can earn money off this one piece of work you've done. And that's been my YouTube videos, where I can go film it once, I have a sponsor in the video, I earn revenue from the YouTube views, it went on TV, you earn that revenue.
Cut it up,
exactly, into Instagram Reels, that then grows your following there, and now you have sponsors who want to be in that stuff. And I only had to do the trip once.
Yeah.
That's the best.
And I think TikTok is really like popping right now, especially if you like make it good to like make it really interesting. You can grow really a lot on TikTok.
Yeah.
So this is also a good way to maybe drive all engagement to your YouTube channel, and then like cross reference it. Yeah. So I think be as on many platforms as possible.
Exactly. And like I said, sell it back to the company you worked for or you got to partner with. You know, if it was a travel and you stay at a hotel, even if you paid for that hotel yourself, if you can do great work for them and then turn around and sell it to them. Yeah, do whatever you can, especially as a small creator. Do whatever you can to stay alive. The key to staying in business is staying in business. And
yeah, and don't get discouraged from like beginning. It's everything is hard.
Yeah.
And then once you put in the work, I think when you put in, I mean, you have to have a little bit like hard work, and then it will come by yourself, by itself.
Imagine if I'd given up on at the end of year two when I only had 5,000 subscribers.
And the worst thing is like regretting it later, you know, like you're stuck in a job and you're like, what if I have to push another year? Maybe I would have made it, right?
Exactly.
I would have actually like never thought I had like make like Instagram or like social media my career kind of.
Right.
And I thought it never would be possible, but then like you had just have to be consistent and work for it, and then everything is possible.
Yeah, yeah. But and be strategic, be smart. Yeah. You know, if you otherwise, it can be really easy to waste your time because something's fun or flashy.
Yeah.
But if you can figure out a way to monetize it, you'll go a lot further.
If you can capture, if you could capture one experience in the whole world, is there, what would it be?
Something that I want to do that I haven't done yet?
Going to Dubai and doing like skydiving off the tower or something, or like how does it work? I don't know.
Yeah. I always say, people always ask me, you know, what are you most excited about, or what trip is have you enjoyed Trains? The most? and I always say it's the next one, because I love that feeling of excitement of planning and all of that. And it's, I've been doing it for 5.5 years, that you can go to this beautiful place and you can go to this beautiful place. They're very different, but they still give you that same feeling, or you get to do this cool extreme thing. And I love all of it, but it gets to a point when you do it so frequently, you're doing something on Tuesday, something on Thursday, something on Sunday. And I know this sounds incredibly privileged that I get to say that, but I think you understand as well, you get to hike mountains and that's what you do. But I really look forward to coming home. People ask me, what do you do on your weekends? And I just love coming home and relaxing and spending time with Nicole when I've been on the road missing her. So I am looking forward to spending the next month with her out traveling on a boat where there's no brand like sponsoring it. Yeah. It's just the trip I want to make.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about that.
That's cool. That's a good ending word.
Okay, good. Thanks for having me.
That was fun. Yeah. Thanks for joining me. First in-person guest, was it that bad?
Nope, not bad at all.
It was not a torture.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I please leave? You got enough?
No.
That was fun.
That was fun, yeah.
Thanks, Seb.
Yeah.
Everyone, I hope you got something out of it. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Oh, yeah. Do your thing at Downey Life, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram.
Everywhere.
All the same name, right?
Yeah.
Make sure to leave him a comment on the next video. And you heard the first... information about the U.S. train journey on this podcast.
That's right, so. Coming next. Nice. So subscribe to this channel, because you don't know who he'll have on next and what other fun information they'll have.
Yeah.
There we go.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
You bet.